It's What's New from WBAA Classical and WBAA.org. I'm John Clare. People may say, I can't sing, Florence Foster Jenkins once remarked to a friend, but no one can ever say, I didn't sing. We'll hear music from the feature film about Florence Foster Jenkins, as well as opera selections from living composers on today's What's New. Gregory Spears composes music that blends romanticism, minimalism, and early music. His work has been called some of the most beautifully unsettling music to appear in recent memory by the Boston Globe. I spoke with him about new opera at the world premiere of his Fellow Travelers in Cincinnati.
I'm so grateful to live at a moment where opera and new opera is something that it's an exciting thing to be a part of. You know, I've thought a lot about what the reasons are for that, this opera resurgence, and I don't know that I know all the answers, but it's wonderful to be a part of it. And I think that we do have some, you know, composers like John Adams who have really, you know, paved the way with these works that, you know, were performed and they're performed again and again and really become repertoire pieces. And I think that was very inspiring to me in college to, you know, listen to Nixon in China and be like, okay, this is something that is uniquely modern and uniquely American. And I think that was very much an inspiration to me.
What are you working on currently?
Well, I just finished a children's opera performed by adults for children. It's called Jason and the Argonauts, so you can imagine the story. And it's about 45 minutes long. It's for the Chicago Lyric. Yeah, they do four performances, public performances, and then they take it to the schools and they tour through the schools. So it's exciting to switch from, you know, Fellow Travelers, which is undeniably a sort of tragedy, to something light and fun and action-based. And I really love to write sort of neoclassical music, and that piece is very neoclassical, and it's sort of a fun thing to be working on right now.
Gregory Spears in an interview about new opera. Let's hear a selection by Michael Nyman from a libretto by the late Oliver Sacks, The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. The Epilogue from The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat by Michael Nyman on What's New. We heard Nashville Opera and conductor Dean Williamson perform. Find out more at WBAA.org, including our playlist and podcasts. That's WBAA.org. Jake Heggie is an established young composer who's known for his operas, Dead Man Walking, Moby Dick, and Great Scott. I caught up with him in Dallas and asked about returning to genres and how he keeps things fresh.
Part of my goal as a composer and as an artist is to always look for a new challenge, something that terrifies me in a new way and is going to challenge me in a new way, so that I don't just sit back and just write, you know, get comfortable with writing, because I don't want writing to be comfortable. I have great curiosity about human beings, about the art form, about music, about drama. So I look for things that will stimulate new brain cells into action, because I just don't want to keep repeating myself. I want to find new territory and tell different stories and seek different ways of expressing them. That's why working with not only a librettist that knows me and knows how to push those buttons, but also a director that does, and a cast that isn't just great singers or great actors. They're very curious artists. And they're going to want to push buttons and ask questions too. And all of that is going to lead to a more invigorating, stimulating project. Some of these projects take 3-4 years. 3 or 4 years of your life, you're never going to get back again. So it better be something meaningful and something that's worth investing those 4 years of your life that you'll never see again. And so working with the people who stimulate you, that you like, that give you ideas and push you in new directions is part of that formula.
Composer Jake Heggie. Let's hear his final monologue from Masterclass. The final monologue from Masterclass by Jake Heggie. We heard the composer at the keyboard with Joyce DiDonato on What's New. Find out more at WBAA.org. I'm your host, John Clare. Carlisle Floyd is one of the most respected composers for contemporary opera. His Prince of Players was premiered in the spring of 2016 in Houston, his 12th opera. I spoke with Floyd about composition.
Were there pressures ever with the serialist? I know your great teacher sort of, Ernst Bacon, said, no, I want to write music that I want to have. But, from the 40s, after sort of Schoenberg and those guys and all the serialists and music concrete and whatnot, there was a big move with Boulez and folks that who had waged a lot of power for a
yes,
while.
They did.
Was there ever a pressure to
oh,
be
sure.
more?
Oh, yeah, sure. It never tempted me. I just figured that if that was the way I had to write, I would choose not to. I didn't feel that was my voice. And also, in the same time we had the serialist, we had the American school with people like Copeland and Roy Harris, who were making a name for American music. So there was another door to go into, and that's the door I took. That was very much my tendency anyway, having worked with Ernst Bacon, because he was a man who was, I would say, almost maniacally American in his work. He would discourage us from using Italian tempo indications.
Wow.
Why don't you just use your own English words here? Why allegro non troppo, So, but that was the spirit of the times, to elevate native work.
Yeah, and I imagine that's quite a decision to have gone from Spartanburg to Syracuse. Radically
yes.
different, but
very.
I'm sure artistically very pleasing.
It was very good for me at the time it happened.
Yeah.
To go from a small school, although a very fine school, to a much larger university and much more diverse student body than the one I had been used to in the South. So it was altogether a good move.
How do you choose what voice part goes with which character? Does it just immediately speak to you, or is it sometimes like, I need a good soprano for this, or this really calls for a baritone?
Well, I do it according to character type. I tend to think of the higher voice being the younger singer, which is, I guess, what we have had down through the centuries, because that makes your bass baritone your lowest male voice. In my opera of Mice and Men, for instance, I have Lenny as a tenor, and people have said, why do you have Lenny a tenor? But I can't imagine his being anything else, because he's very childlike. And so there's a quality of youthfulness in the higher voice to me. It's just a general character type that make me determine what type of voice I want to use and how well I know the character.
Have there been times where you've had writer's block, either musically or and how do you deal with that? Because it's every time you have that you know, it's a blank page every time, you know, when you start.
I wait. Because I don't know, you can try to put into effect the few things that you know about if you're stalled. I mean, usually when you're writing music and come to a block in opera, it's because you don't understand, you haven't arrived at the emotional atmosphere you wanted for the scene. As soon as you can define that for yourself, what is the emotional atmosphere in this scene, or what Verdi called la tinta, the color of the scene, then the tempo comes to you, what's the prevailing emotional atmosphere you're trying to create, all those things that you can, in a sense, become really very clinical about almost. And you have to, and that's the way you get out of writer's block in composing, at least for me.
Composer Carlisle Floyd. This is the first scene of Act Two of Carlisle Floyd's Wuthering Heights. Carlisle Floyd's Wuthering Heights, the first scene of Act Two with Florentine Opera and conductor Joseph Mikanovich, a reference recording release on What's New. I'm John Clare. Find out more about this show and find playlists and podcasts at WBAA.org. Composer Jennifer Higdon wrote Cold Mountain for Santa Fe Opera. I had a chance to speak with her as she was writing the acclaimed work.
Yes.
And you're going to work with Gene Shear on it?
I am working with Gene Shear, who, ironically, was here last night for the violin concerto concerts because the final performance of the opera he did with Jake Heggie, Moby Dick, is right across the way here.
Yeah.
At the Windspear. And so we met this morning. We're still batting around ideas. It's slowly progressing, but I've been so busy with other things, and he's been so busy with that opera that nothing's been moving that much in probably the past couple of months, actually, yeah.
Now, that will affect your schedule big time, right?
Yeah, I've kind of allowed room for it to affect my schedule. I've kind of stopped taking commissions. I've kind of stopped everything in order to allow enough time, because that's a 2 to 3 year writing adventure. It definitely alters things. Yeah.
But it'll be fun. I mean, you've done big solo voice pieces. You've done chorus and violin and orchestra and whatnot.
You know, it's nice to try other things. That's, for me, to keep it all interesting is to do other things, to try other things that I'm not used to doing. And this is such a big form, and it has its own dramatic challenges. And so I'm kind of like looking forward to exploring it. I'm learning a lot of the repertoire and studying scores and going to operas, going to new operas, going to old operas, and checking everything out. So it's also the learning about it has been a lot of fun for me. It's kind of refreshing.
Jennifer Higdon talking about writing opera. These are a few selections from her Cold Mountain, recorded on Pentatone Music. Selections from Cold Mountain by Jennifer Higdon. It's available on Pentatone Music with the Santa Fe Opera and Miguel Harth Bedoya. Find out more about the release and hear our podcasts at WBAA.org. It's What's New on WBAA Classical and WBAA.org. I'm your host, John Clare. Coming up, John Corleano discusses his Ghosts of Versailles and music from the motion picture Florence Foster Jenkins. Let's hear the overture, waltz, and finale from Powder Her Face by Thomas Addis on What's New. Powder Her Face, the overture, waltz, and finale by Thomas Addis. We heard Paul Daniel with the National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain on What's New. There's more at WBAA.org, including playlists and podcasts. On two occasions, I spoke with composer John Corleano about his opera, The Ghosts of Versailles.
This was a very interesting story because I'd never wanted to write an opera because I had seen too many operas come and go, and I knew how much work it took. And I remember talking to Aaron Copland. You know, he was saying, boy, don't write an opera. He said, you're going to waste your time. He said, you're going to spend 3 years, it turned out to be 12, 3 years writing this piece, and then they're going to play it, and then they don't play it again. Write three symphonies in that time. I remember him saying that to me. And, you know, I had that view, too, that really opera was, so many things were out of your control that you really couldn't depend upon. The libretto, the director, the diva, all of these things that could change everything. And, you know, with a concert piece, also, if you write a concert piece and it's successful with the public and, you know, it plays, it will get played all over the place. And even if you write a piece that's not successful the first time, it might be given a second chance. But today, with the economics the way they are, an opera being an entire evening, and an opera company having to program that and nothing else, they don't have Itzhak Perlman playing in the second half to bring the audience in, you really have to have a successful opera to have it continue. So I really didn't want to do it. And at that time, this was in the 1970s, mid-70s, I was friendly with Renata Scotto, who was the reigning diva at the Met, and she was terrific. I always thought she was the greatest in terms of what she could do on a stage. She said to me, you know, I really would love to have a piece that I could sing with orchestras so that I would do something dramatic rather than sing a bunch of unrelated arias, which is what I get to do now. She said, how about Medea? And I thought, gee, that'd be interesting. And her English wasn't that good then, but I was thinking of Seneca's Medea, which is a particularly bloody one in Latin, and suggested it to her. And she said, that sounds like something I'd like to do. You must have a meeting with Jimmy. I'd never met Levine, but suddenly there we were at the Ginger Man having dinner, and we were talking about this, and Levine said, that's very interesting. Tell me, are you interested in opera? And I said, not really. And he said, well, what would you do if you did do an opera? And I said, well, if I did do an opera, which I'm not going to, I would probably bring back the characters of Beaumarchais, Figaro and Almaviva and the Count and Countess and a whole bunch of them because they're so wonderful and write a grand buffa. And he was really shocked because Levine grew up in the 50s when, you know, angst and systems music were at their height, and the idea that one would write a buffa just seemed absurd. He said, why would you do that? He said, buffas don't work in our house. The Met is 4,000 seats. And I said, the buffas that are meant for tiny halls don't work there. But you could write a grand opera buffa with, an orchestration that was much more brilliant and the tessitura of the singers in a higher range so they'd carry in that 4,000-person hall. And you could make something very exciting if you did that. And I left it at that, and I was a very good friend with Alice Tully, socially. And we were going to dinner one night, and she said to me, you know, dear, she said, you'd better start thinking about that opera you don't want to write because we just had a board meeting and they want to commission you to write the 100th anniversary opera. And I said, oh, my God. You know, I just thought, this is too much. What do I do? And I kept thinking of writing an opera as the Hope Diamond complete with curse. You know, there's this gorgeous diamond and you say, okay, I'll take the diamond, but you know it's going to kill you. I thought, what am I going to do? There it is, the Met, their 100th anniversary. They didn't have a single opera before this opera for 25 years, quarter of a century. The last operas they did were with the openings of the Met with Sam Barber way back in Anthony Cleopatra. And so Levine and all of those people there, Volpe, they had never performed a world premiere of any kind. And there they were asking me. So I said, finally, I would do it, and did devise an opera in which Beaumarchais was a character, the great writer and patriot, spy, inventor, musician, and everything else, in addition to being a playwright. And it's called The Ghosts of Versailles, and it dealt with Marie Antoinette and Beaumarchais in an imaginary love affair, although they knew each other, and in fact he taught her children to play the harp, and he invented the pedal harp, and it's also about bringing back his characters to life. So I wrote this piece, but I was late. They wanted to do it in 83 and 84, and they commissioned it about 79, 80. And the problem with the Met is that they cast 3 years ahead of time. And after 6 months, it became obvious that I was not going to make the centenary. So Levine sort of turned another way, and I wrote the piece and sent it in. And it took several years for me to write it, for him to look at it, and then finally they scheduled the piece and did it in 1991. I must say, it was an extraordinary evening because they did a great job. And it's an extraordinary video disc and VHS. I believe it's coming out on DVD. And the Met is bringing it back. They brought it back twice, but they're bringing it back at the 9-10 season. And it has several other places. Teatro Colón in Buenos Aires is doing it, and then other productions. So it's going to start to have its life. The problem with this piece is the video, however. It's really very ironic. The video, first of all, has the greatest singers in the world. It has Teresa Estrada at the height of her career. It has Marilyn Horn. It has Håkon Haggegaard, the debut of Renee Fleming, and everybody else. I mean, it's just a catalog of great singing. But also, it was a very opulent show because it was a celebratory show of the 100th anniversary. And at the end of the curtain calls at the original production, there were hundreds of people on the stage. And every producer who's looked at that television has said, I can't do The Ghost. It's bigger than War and Peace. Actually, it's not. They did it 4 years after that, and they did 50% of the people. But it's very strange. It had that reaction of, instead of people wanting to do it, they were terrified of it, which is starting to change now because people are beginning to realize it isn't that big. It just was, they've dragged everybody off the streets to be on that stage. I mean, it was a great production. It's going to have its life, and I must say it was a very large investment, but a thrilling one to have. And as a friend of mine, Philip Ramey, said to me at the premiere of Ghost when he came backstage, he said, well, John, from now on, it's all downhill. He said, where can you go after this? And he kind of had a point.
Well, I know you've been busy in L.A. The reviews have been amazing for Ghost of Versailles. How is that to hear yet again? And with Jimmy Conlon and those guys, it's got to be a blast.
Well, it was really fantastic. The guy who directed it, Darko Trejnik, is the one who directed. He won the Tony this year for directing Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder. And it won the Tony for Best Musical. So I had a guy who was so sensitive. He also runs the Shakespeare Festival in Hartford. So he's completely versed in everything. And it's so imaginative, and it tells the story so well, because it's a rather complex story. The direction was great. The performers, I mean, are just Patti LuPone singing Samira. I figured after Marilyn Horne, you know, you want to go in a completely different direction. So we asked Patti to do it. And Patricia Rosette is a great Marie Antoinette.
Yeah, and an all-star cast, and this is being recorded now, right?
This is being recorded, yes.
So that's got to, I mean, this is not, I mean, we think about such a neat story that you guys created, but, I mean, there's 50 kazoos in
that. I know, there's everything in that, everything in that. And in this version, Act One ends with the Wagnerian Viking lady with the shield and the armor and the horns being hit in the face with a cream pie. I flipped over, and the audience is rolling in the seats.
Oh, man, that's cool. And I think it's one of those things, recordings make such a difference, I think, mm-hmm. these days, because you did a reduced orchestration this for St. Louis, right?
Right.
And so this is the full band.
This is the full band, yes.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that's the way it should be recorded first, I think, with the full Met orchestration.
John Corigliano discussing The Ghosts of Versailles. It's been recorded on Pentatone Music with LA Opera, as he mentioned. We'll hear the Buffalo Philharmonic and Joanne Fletta play the orchestral suite, Phantasmagoria, on What's New. The Buffalo Philharmonic and Joanne Fletta played the orchestral suite for The Ghosts of Versailles, music by John Corigliano, on this What's New from WBAA. I'm your host, John Clare. Find out more at WBAA.org. John Harbison spent many years working on The Great Gatsby. There are some of his remarks transcribed at WBAA.org about the opera. We'll hear Remembering Gatsby, a foxtrot that uses themes from the opera on What's New. Remembering Gatsby by John Harbison with the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra and David Zinman directing on What's New. Learn more at WBAA.org. Finally today, we'll turn to the silver screen and the major motion picture with Meryl Streep and Hugh Grant, Florence Foster Jenkins. From the soundtrack, this is Aida Garofalina with conductor Terry Davies singing The Bell Song from Delibes' Lakmé on What's New. Delibes' Bell Song, sung by Aida Garofalina with the London Metropolitan Orchestra on What's New. It's from the soundtrack to Florence Foster Jenkins on Decca Classics. Find out more, including our playlist and podcasts, at WBAA.org. What's New is a production of WBAA Classical, a listener-supported broadcast service of Purdue University. Production assistance from Erica Yon and Kevin Howard. The content director and executive producer is Greg Kostraba. I'm your host and producer, John Clare. Thanks for listening to What's New.